Clone Research. It's Thursday, March the 7th, and I'm in the home of Yvonne Babies in Washington, D.C. Hello?
Hello, David. How are you today?
Fine. How are you? How old are you?
75.
Okay. And where were you born?
I was born in Palms, California, on November 13, 1946.
What's Palms near?
It's near Culver City in Los Angeles County.
And did you grow up there?
I grew up my first 10.5 years in California, in Southern California, Los Angeles County. Pasadena, Ventura, which may not be in Los Angeles County, and Echo Park Avenue, and places around.
And then what happened after California?
I went to live in Minnesota when my daughter died in California. And I stayed there 5.5 years, and I've been in Washington, D.C. ever since that time.
So you probably finished up your schooling in D.C.?
I graduated from high school in Minnesota before coming to work for the government in D.C.
Was that during the war?
Midway through the war, exactly.
A lot of people, a lot of women came to D.C.
Government
girls. Key girls. Fine. And where did you live at that time? In Washington.
Well, when I first came, my mother and brother were living in this area over in Arlington, Virginia, and we lived in an old house up a part of it on Lee Highway.
Housing was pretty tight for us.
It was, and we had a little dog, and we couldn't get the best living accommodations because not everyone wanted to take a dog.
And what did you do at the government? What type of work did you do? What department was?
I worked for the War Department, the Bureau of Public Relations, and I started as a junior stenographer, and I was with the government for 2 years, and I was an administrative assistant when I left the Office of the Secretary of Defense.
And when did you leave the project?
It was 1957, spring.
Okay, and what did you do then?
I stayed home. I have a little daughter, and so I was with my mom.
Okay. Now, growing up, were you interested in sports?
No, I never was.
And you didn't play sports then?
I like ice skating and some winter sports in Minnesota, but not skiing.
And when did you meet Bob? And under what circumstances?
I was working in the, I was on loan actually, from the press branch in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. And I was working in the Deputy Director's Office for the Bureau of Public Relations. And he was coming into the press branch for his interview for his first day on the job. And he said I was the first person who ever spoke to him in the Pentagon.
And when was this? What year?
It was in February 1961.
Okay, and what happened after that?
Well, we dated some. I mean, he was just out of the University of Missouri. He had a bachelor of journalism degree and also his master's degree. And he was in need of a job, and he was interested in working for the government. So, he
became the Pentagon by
appointment.
Okay, and subsequently got the job?
Yes, he did.
And what did he do, specifically?
In the beginning, he was in the reproduction section that would cut stencils and print press releases, and after a short while, he became a night officer, information officer. And he worked there a while until he received an appointment as assistant editor of the Civil Engineer Corps Bulletin of the Anti-Doctrine Committee, associated with the Navy.
So I guess he was probably with the Navy Department.
Yes, he was there.
Okay. Now, at this time, did he start his writing for the sporting news and other things earlier?
I believe that his first article was published in the Sporting News about that time, and She took me on a date to a very nice restaurant on 13th and E Street called the Neptune Room.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent his entire check for his article. It used to be like $7.95. I mean, that's what the meal cost. We spent it all.
Big time splurgers.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was his first article. Do you know how he got the job, or got the opportunity to submit the article?
Well, he'd always read the story news. And I think he started collecting record books when he was about 9 years old. So he had great respect for the story news. And I think eventually they did offer him a job, but it was pay would have been less for that than he was already working for government, but he didn't consider it.
Do you remember what the article was about?
I believe Evelyn Medley has a copy of it, though.
Oh. Okay. So this would have been around 1951 or so?
I would think so, yeah.
And then he continued periodically, I guess, writing for the school.
Right. Yeah, he was, I guess
you called him periodically. Right, okay. Did he write for any other
publications?
Baseball Digest is sort of like the size of the Reader's Digest.
Yeah, they might have been that one. He also had articles published regularly in the Roll Call magazine or newspaper, just publications.
And
had
various different articles in that.
He never
missed
baseball.
He was fairly good. Okay. And, okay, well, now, at some time, he probably got this idea of getting people together to form a group.
Yes, and he did.
Can you give us some background on that, perhaps?
Well, his articles were always accepted. Never did I remember any rejections whatsoever. But when the Sporting News changed from a baseball publication to an all sports publication, then they did start saying we can't use everything we sent in. And he figured that there were other people in that same boat who were disappointed in their articles were also not used. So he got the idea of getting a group together in Cooperstown, New York, and there were 15 or 16 other ones. Quickback Line and Bill Haber, I believe.
Bob
McConnell. Bob McConnell, correct. And Ray Nemeth. And Tom Huffert was a young fellow who wrote up with us, and he was also part of the
Now, how did Bob get, how did he know about these people?
Because they were on his mailing list for baseball league, which was quite a popular.
Of course, he continued after many, many years.
Yeah, I think it's
over the last year. Okay, so in 1971, Bob and 15 other people met up in Cooperstown.
Yes.
And then what?
Well, I don't think he ever saw that it would grow in favor, would grow to the size it has, but I think he was elected the first president. I remember John Carson and Bob McConnell sitting at our dining room table and trying to put together the rules of the organization, what they'd be. And while they sat here, Bob took off and went to evening church, which he did every Sunday in those days.
Is that nearby?
No, it's something like 13 miles away. Silver Spring Christian. No, I think it was a Washington Christian Reformed Church. So, anyway, the organization did start from that point, but it was all kind of a homegrown production because he would, he'd edit all the articles, he'd write some of the articles. I would have to carry the things over the printer about a mile away. I would walk over and come back later and pick them up. And then on Saturdays, the group of people in the local area here would get together around the table and have a good time and mail out the labor bulletin and whatever. And as for the research journal, Bob used to type the whole thing. And I remember he hired a lady who worked in her apartment as one of the people who typed it. He typed it for himself. And it just sort of grew from that point on.
Now, the name of the organization, was he the one who came up with it, or was there a special reason, perhaps, to get an acronym? Or
well, I don't know exactly. He wanted it to be American Baseball Research, and I think Bill Gustafson, the professor, came up with the idea of some would say it wasn't just American Baseball Research. Other members eventually, we met two or three of them in Tokyo in 1977. We tried to call one in Australia when they were there on the same trip. And I think there were members in England and other places.
Now, it started with 16 men, or 16 persons, with two of them. But was there any particular time that they sort of got up, we're up to 7,000 now. Was there something, any kind of incident that perhaps led to a large amount or anybody that helped you grow it so much?
I think the tagline was in favor of enlarging the group. I don't know. I guess word of mouth spread, maybe the coordinators do all the things too, that this organization existed. And interest grew, and then I think Bob was in favor of having national meetings in different places, California sometimes, New York other times, and, you know, so everybody get a chance to go to a meeting. It kept growing.
I guess you went to quite a few of the national conventions, maybe all of them.
No, I haven't been at all. I haven't been in recent years, but I did go at first. I've been to
any special highlights of these things you remember? Stand out.
I guess you see some of the prominent baseball players there. It was always very pleasant. A nice dinner and staying in nice places. Sometimes they would try to stay in college dormitories. I recall in Toronto that was the case. And that was kind of nice too. And they gave the house four members and their wives in little houses on the campus. They got to know other people down there. No, I think everybody really looked forward to that.
And can you think of some stories that stand out in your mind throughout the years that were unusual?
Well, as for myself, I think you might have heard Joe Simonek say the other night that when we were in Toronto, after breakfast, the Catholic members who were at that breakfast decided to try to find a church to go to. And Joe Simonek and his wife offered to drive. And Bud Braun, I think he was from some place like Santa Claus, Indiana, and I and perhaps one other person drove all around the suburbs. Joe was driving, trying to find a Catholic church, and we never did find one. And it was kind of frustrating, but finally, after Mr. and Mrs. Simonek went back to their home, they sent me a dispensation that they'd made up, excusing me from having missed church that day. But, I'm sure Bob would have had a lot more stories than that. It just was that he really enjoyed everyone. I mean, I know everybody say he just loved anyone in the group. He was very glad that he was part of the organization. He didn't take full credit for that, of course. He was very glad he was serving him in a good way.
Now, in the question in the beginning, Bob is on who was president as well as later serving on the board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
But then at one, I guess at a certain time, he decided to be not quite so active, let other people take over.
Right.
Was there any problems with that, or anything up to that?
No, I don't think so.
But,
he did have other talents, and he was getting involved. His favorite, of course, is still working full time. No, I think he was going to people like Don McConnell and all of the starting members and new members off of whatever talent they have. Ralph was there for a time. So, well, Ralph came to them right about the time he retired from the government.
How long ago was
that? I'd say that's about 20 years ago.
So he retired about 55 then?
Yes, yes. His family had a history of heart problems, and a couple of his brothers had already had heart bypass surgeries, and then he showed up that he needed a triple heart bypass himself. And so I think after that, even though he was still active and other things, I think that was slowing him down to his problem. And so he never complained too much. I mean, he was still active in his softball league at church. In fact, they tried to get him to come back to the regular player when he was 70. He was very fast at running and a very good batter.
What position?
Yeah, well, I guess he was the pitcher part of the time. I'm not sure which one of the bases were the second base.
So he did that for many years?
Oh, yeah. He was the chairman of the church fellowship league. He had to make arrangements with the Department of Recreation for he was play on, he'd bring along the lawnmower and mow the bases, you know, get ready for the game. This is what came along with the satisfaction. Everything had to be okay.
And this was a church league?
Oh, yeah.
A league with different churches.
Right, exactly.
How did the teams do?
Well, they won several trophies, I think. Then he'd have an awards dinner at some restaurant in the area, and had presentations of the nice guy. One of the players, did a eulogy at his memorial for the spring person of 2014. Also, he had a touch football league, and he was active in other things, like he liked to go to the pro football hall of fame in Canton, Ohio. He was interested in boxing. He had a very long acquaintanceship with Max Schmeling, the old German boxer. He had planned to fight again at that time.
It was an article several months ago, a lengthy article about Max Schmeling in the Sports Illustrated.
Right, he was a philanthropist, I guess. He helped Joe Louis. He had many interests. He also, I know he could name all the popes.
Going all the way back?
Yeah.
There were a lot of popes.
That's right. And he'd be interested in, new appointments for cardinals and things like that. He just was a person who liked facts and figures in his life.
Did you ever do some assisting with any of the research?
I helped him with his dissertation for his PhD at Richmond University. I did bibliography and a lot of the cycles he had hired about two-thirds of the way through, so she couldn't do any more, so I had to do that. But his research, he enjoyed so much that he was considered. He was very interested in Soviet history also, in Russian history. And so maybe a month ago, he recognized someone real person on television and told me who that was. And when he did it, PhD, which was on Anglo-Italian diplomatic relations, 1930 to 35. He had the help of Mussolini's former ambassador, Mr. Rosso, who lived in this country 6 months a year, and the other 6 months in Italy. And the ambassador sat down and typed a whole bunch of notes from Rav on that subject, and Abdullah was the archive. Some of the material was still classified, and it could be classified in case he could really understand what he was saying.
Did he speak any other languages?
Not too well. His father came from the Netherlands, and his mother was born in America, but of a German parent. And the father and mother were taught with the older children prior to World War I, Bob never really picked up on the language because he was going to the years. He studied French and Spanish in school, but wasn't British in the
And Bob is born in Iowa?
Yes, he was.
And I guess he grew up there until he went to college.
He graduated from Pinellas High School in 1943, and then he went out to San Diego to study at Berks. He just died last November. Berks was working at Consolidated Aircraft in San Diego, and had lived out in California. So Bob worked part-time at Consolidated. But because he was so young, he wasn't allowed to work full shift. In the meantime, he was going to a prep school. I think probably doing business and not still professional. But then he investigated a program of naval officers. And they were interested in that his eyesight wasn't that good. So he went into the Army Air Corps and served Okinawa and somewhat agreed to support him. But this was right at the end of World War II. He was a great nose guy in B-24 and also a radio operator. But after he finished,
so he probably saw some of the combat, I guess.
Well, I think the Japanese were still on Okinawa at the time, but there was danger that the snipers, I believe. But then he went to the University of Missouri, and he was interested in the School of Journalism, I think, at Columbia, Missouri. And I think he got his bachelor's degree in 3 years, and then that was in 1949, and then he got his master's degree in bachelor's again.
And he got his PhD at Georgetown. What the dissertation, was that one? Was that the Italian thing?
Yes, yeah, exactly. It was going to school 5 nights a week and working full time during the day. And when our daughter was in first grade, the teacher said, "If I was the only first grade student I've ever heard who uses the word dissertation in the vocabulary, and it would be, don't bother Daddy now, he's working on his dissertation, you know, that's how he learned it." But he still found that to really good, so it's pretty modified.
Well, with all his activities and interests, he must have really been an organized person to get all this stuff together.
Yes.
Any secrets or?
I don't know. He had his own filing system. I mean, there were no computers then, I guess, but he retained a lot of information in his head. And he also found time to go to the Library of Congress, even though maybe once a week. And yet, we would take long vacations in the summer, and he would be very interested in stopping at the great presidents, or civil engineers, or officers, or baseball players. Also, we visited the homes of the president, vice president. And he made it very interesting. We once took a 3-week driving trip around the United States, I think, about an 8,300 mile trip. So we drove from Washington, went by way of Chicago, by halfway through Salt Lake City, and we're down the coast of California and came back on by way of New Orleans. So he did make a good journey. got a nice letter from a man who hired him and he went to the Atomic Energy Commission. I could do that.
Oh, great. Oh, well, see, he was with the Navy and then he went. This is after he was with the Navy?
Yes, he went to the Atomic Energy Commission.
When did that?
Well, let's see, I'm not sure what it says, but probably in the late 50s or the 60s. This is a letter from Ben Lowe, and he starts with, "Dear Yvonne, I'm truly sorry I missed the memorial service. I was having an ill morning. Also, I apologize for doing this in type. I feel that it is the only way I can be left alone. One thinks back over one's life and regrets some decisions and applauds others. One that I feel best about concerns a certain hiring episode. There was this vacancy at the AEC, and it fell to me to choose among three candidates whose resumes were before me. Two fairly outranked the third in length and weight of experience, but there was something about the third, so straightforward, so free from puffery, so clear. Unable to decide, I asked each of the three to edit and otherwise critique a certain piece of writing that had come up from the ranks. With those responses in hand, there was no longer any doubt. Number three, Nameless Davis, was fairly the drive. I feel good about this decision, not because of anything against the boss. He was clearly going to land on his feet, no matter what, but because of what it did for me. It gave me a friendship, true, dependable, everlasting, through thick and thin, a source of oft-repeated humorous delight over meals and on the telephone. There was probably much about Bob that I didn't know. He was involved in so many things, but what I knew I loved and will miss so very much. Jean joins me in expressing our deepest sympathy and in wishing you and your family from now on all the very best that life has to offer. Fondly, Ben Lowe, 3-3-2-3. This man is in his 80s now, and he's quite frail, but his mind is very clear, and I really appreciate that letter.
Well, did Bob finish up his government career with the Atomic Energy Commission?
Yes. It was the Department of Energy by the time he left. I believe he was working down at Lompoc Plaza in Washington. And it was during the Reagan administration. He had enough years of service counting as 3 years of military service to retire the 3 years. So he did, he was 55 when he retired, and I think he was very.
What did he do? He went in specific with the Atomic Energy Commission.
Well, he was in long-range planning at one time. He was a speechwriter I know he wrote for Dixie Lee Ray, who was an editor of Atomic Energy.
Which he used to be the governor of Washington.
Yeah, after that, she was. He also wrote for Glenn Seaborg, who was also the head. He took a year off when he became a congressional fellow, and he worked for Senator Mark Hatfield of Oregon and Representative Robert Taft of Ohio. He really enjoyed working for both men. He considered them fine gentlemen. And he did go with Representative Taft to Ohio in a baseball-connected trip. I've forgotten, it was probably dedication of something in baseball. And,
In Ohio.
And I know he was involved in this using wind power for energy, those,
I've seen that in California. They're like blades.
Yeah.
We were visiting in Palm Springs when we drove from San Diego. We couldn't figure out what they were.
Yeah.
So
well,
we stopped and asked
them. Yeah. That's in wind power, right?
Right. There are lots of them, too.
Oh, yeah. I think I've only seen them in pictures. He also enjoyed writing song parodies. I was thinking of one thing that he did a take on was three things of Orient are, it was these three things of Orient are. PAR was the plans and reports, I guess. They have Christmas parties, they're going away. They have charity like the Gilbert and Sullivan charities, the Susie occasion, like welcoming an incoming minister or saying goodbye to a minister. He also did skits featuring church people who imitated the ministers and their wives. I mean, they were very popular, these parties, and he did, and of course, all of good things. Well, we had a half-acre lot up in Sarnia, Pennsylvania, which is where Sea Liberty is. And we grew up there several times during the growing season. We planted a lot of trees up there. We loved birch trees and pine trees and blue spruce, which is particularly his favorite, and fruit trees. And so he would mow that several times during the growing season. And we never built a house there, and it finally got to be too much for it, and we did sell it, but there was a little sadness about giving it up, because it, you know, there were our dogs, and they were going along, and it was fine, but I mean, I just...
Probably about a couple hours a year?
Yeah, about 72 hours, I guess.
Never built anything?
Never. I wanted a house at the beach instead.
You told us I thought it was going to be like a summer home.
And it never worked out that way. It was a camping place for the day. So, he had some of the interest in agriculture that he had from his days in Iowa, but he wasn't cut out to be a farmer. He just, maybe he was writing.
What did his parents do?
His father came from the Netherlands. In the late 1800s, he was hired by a farmer to come and work with him, and he was a general farm worker. And later, he married a mother who was the daughter of a Nebraska farmer who settled in Iowa. And they were rural people, country people, very hardworking and very religious.
Certainly
have fun. They did. I think they lost it during the Depression. There were nine children in the family, obviously eight. And
Evelyn Begley has
eight children. They had their children over a period of 22 or 23 years. Nine in all, six boys and two girls. So they're half gone.
Five children?
Four of them. So that's, Bob enjoyed organizing family reunions too. They were done in about 2 or 3 days. We had speakers and a dinner and a supper. People would have to stay in hotels for many of the time.
I guess they were really scattered around the country?
Yes. Two in California, one in Denver, a couple in Iowa, one in Minnesota. We were out here. But they were really scattered. I think that bothered Bob's mother. She told me it was a lucky farmer and all of his children all live in his sight. There was a chance to travel though between places. He got to be on the same tour as others.
That's when they did come, it was quite a gathering.
Oh, yes. They're still doing this. They're the first cousins reunion planned for July. And I think the last time I attended, had 60 people there. They're very popular, and it's nice to see the younger generation interested in keeping the family history together that way.
Did Bob have any kind of favorite story or experience that you're aware of?
used to tell something about being so slighted by a baseball coach in high school. And I don't know the entire story, but apparently the coach didn't let him pitch for the local team, and the coach moved on to another place, and Bob's team still behind Kanawha. Kanawha team defeated the coach's new team. Over it, I think.
Yes, Bobby Bloom pitcher.
He told another story too about when he and his brother Jack, who 3 years older, were holding circles or couples or something out in the heat. And Bob offered to go get some ice water at a nearby farm while Jack was just going.
Joe Torre finally speaks up.
He heard that his friend, that he was out in the barn, and when Bob went out there, Johnson's boy, was listening to the radio, and was actually Ronald Reagan reenacting all of this, he would get the information, and he would do a reenactment.
Get on telegraph.
I think it was
recreation.
Yeah, on the radio. And Bob overstayed the time he should have to just go get ice water for Jack.
Carried away.
So, see, that was kind of an example of Bob not being cut out for time, but I think Jack was glad enough to get the ice water, but he might have stayed a little bit for Reagan so long.
That's right, Reagan was in Des Moines, Iowa, at WHO, radio station WHO. Bob probably heard many things.
Yeah. I don't think they had a radio.
You thought that they lost the farm during the Depression,
I think
but
they did.
Did they get it back? Or did they
come? I think so. I think by that time, they went through, I think the parents were too old to really be farming. They had a little house in Winwood, Iowa. Winwood was a small town, so it was
very How big was Kanawha?
I always thought it was about 400, but Bob said it was 800 acres. It was too much bigger.
Yes. I think I've heard Kanawha, but...
It's a Kanawha, West Virginia.
No, I heard of it more than 800. Some of those towns passed dying out, though.
That's right. Well, it's still kind of a pretty little town. It has a main street, and businesses are there, and the head church, we look at the chickens and the grain over there. The farmers would retire and come in and live in the town. We have several schools.
How many children do you think about that?
Just Roberta.
Does she live in the area?
Yes, she does. She has two boys. One is 25 and the other is 19 now. And I should add that Bob has a lot of cats and dogs.
They're going to
You're putting them on your coat. You don't want
to. Naturally. That's okay. Probably it's warm enough. I probably won't be able to wear one.
Anything else you'd like to ask? I'm thinking that even some of the members they would have lots of stories to report. But even like Tom Hubbard, who was a young guy at the time, he was a fifth year architectural student. UGI and Lewis, and he came with us on the trip to go to the it was so good to see him there after the night before. And he always impressed us very favorably. He was over there. He had a big grand piano right at the house he's now, and he would sit down and play it sometimes. One of our favorites to hear was Spanish eyes. Bob did not study his piano. I studied for quite a few years and wasn't very good. But our daughter loved the piano. She was about 15 and 20 years old. And she played beautifully. She played classical music. And she also taught in a music studio on Matthew's Jay Studio. And she played in a few different instruments. She played in a few of noises.
Tell me about yourself. What did you retire from?
I'm a pharmacist.
Oh, yeah.
A retired pharmacist.
Oh, yeah.
My story with Bob was, I really wasn't very close to him, and I would see him at the meetings and conventions. Uh-huh. But when we went to San Francisco for the National Convention, which I think was, uh-huh. we went to Candlestick Park to see a ball game that night. I'm not sure if you were there or not.
No, I wasn't.
But it was very windy, Candlestick Park. It was windy. We were sitting up in the upper deck in the front of it. We didn't have a back seat. We were sort of in the second or third row, and it was really cold. And then I guess after about the fifth inning or so, we both retreated downstairs to the back to get out of the wind. And then, I guess it was around the eighth, bottom of the eighth or top of the ninth, we went back up, and it was very mild. The wind had died down. It was pleasant. So that's nice.
Was that why he borrowed Red Nemeth's sweater?
I don't know. He had a coat. I think Bob had his hat and coat on. He had, I think, an overcoat.
But he must have had...
They were just very windy and chilly.
He had this red sweater that looked like it had been put on and taken off many times. Red Nemeth had let him borrow out of his car gun. That must have been in a different place. He was kind of hoping Red Nemeth would give it to him. He didn't. Bob liked it, and his ball player. He was in Columbus, Ohio, I guess. We made several attempts to see him. And when we finally got to see him, he and my lady, who wanted to take a fishing with them, you know, just kind of an informal sort of thing. And we had this apartment, and modest, and it was just nice to meet somebody like that. I can't remember his name. I think they called him Tomato Face. He must have had, some sensitivity or something. But I'd like to find people and search them out and give them credit. He loved this news of this guy, Carl Hayden, that was in.
Senator from Arizona.
Yes,
for
sure.
He was in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. He was
the first senator.
But he came as their representative in Arizona the same time he became a state in 1912. And he made the remark, he was going to Washington, he's not going to be a show horse, he's going to be a workhorse. And Bob liked that. He admired Carl Hayden. He said to me, I think Carl Hayden is retiring. Why don't we go up to the Capitol and look and see if we can find out where the retirement party is? So I said, okay. So we went up there and ran on a side door, and here was this gathering. There was Carl Hayden, and everyone was kind of looking around like they were expecting someone else to show up, but sure enough, it was going to be Lyndon Johnson, president.
Okay.
And he was only about 6 feet away from us. We weren't invited or anything, but there we were. And that was kind of a short one. And he liked the older people working. He went up to Theodore Green from Rhode Island.
Oh, another old man.
He was 10 years older than Carl Hayden.
Wow.
Bob admired him too. He liked longevity. He worked for a while, part-time back and forth, with a woman named Dallas Boone Beard, I think her name was, down in Virginia. And she was doing the study on that. Older people, not as American, but American, to the modest of something, you know, not just anything we do, but but he's still active in there.
Yeah.